Brian Vander Ark, the singer of the Verve Pipe, he played Varsity Club. It was packed. Third song, he's like, well, I'll just get this out of the way. And he plays Freshman.
Yeah.
Place fucking emptied out. Like, it just fucking emptied out.
That's awesome.
It was like, sad but predictable. You can tell, like, he's done that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, he knows it's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
Marcy Playground did that. I saw Marcy Playground when that album came
out.
They
opened with Sex and Candy, and then everybody left.
Yeah, because it wasn't packed in the beginning. They hadn't really broken yet.
Yeah.
Like, it was getting played, and they opened with Sex and Candy. And they're like, if that's all you came to hear, go ahead and go, because we're just fucking around now. And they played, like, the heaviest, like, rockiest set. Jeez. Like, it was fucking awesome, because they just didn't give a fuck.
I do like those bands that have one hit, and people think that that's what all their music sounds like, so they show up and like, I don't like this band.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Play Hey Delilah.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. The hardest trick is making them stay. I'm Mr. Dave, joined by my co-host, who I tricked into staying 6 years ago,
yeah.
Mr. Ryan.
That's the longest relationship of my life.
I don't know why we're so formal, but we are both. We are Mr. Movies On Up. Our tagline for this week, whatever I just said, I closed it
Something
out.
Something about making them stay.
Yeah, the hardest trick is making them stay. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. You must love prize packs, because if you mail us, you are right, and we pick you, you will win a glorious Movies
You'll
On Up prize package.
You'll be a lucky
dog. Yeah. This week, no clue what movies are coming out. Did not look it up, but it is the birthday week of one Jason West, who's listened from the beginning.
Continuity policeman.
It's like a year and a half, 2 years, he mailed the tagline every week. It was like a running gag that only me and him knew. I was fine with that. But that's worthy of a birthday pick. We are doing favorite John Cusack movies. I think that's a good list to do. Cusack's one that I think would be a fun list to do. But given his career state now, we aren't going to have another opportunity to really do a Cusack list. So we're going to do a John Cusack list. I think about John Cusack. I think, like, oh, he's in some of my favorite movies. Like, I think I'm a big John Cusack fan.
The list is very top-heavy.
Very
top-heavy.
In that
respect.
And it's...
And mine's in real shitty shape because I didn't put any of those on.
Well, it's tricky because there was a time where I loved John Cusack.
I believe it was called the 90s.
But then that took a turn. I don't know what happened. I think I summed it up to Westy in a text one day that it's almost like he got hit in the head and he woke up and thought he was Ray Liotta. Because all of a sudden, all these movies he's doing, he's like the bad guy, hitman, the guy who's selling children. He's playing these roles that you would think somebody like Ray Liotta would play. And Cusack doesn't really pull that off. He's likable. He was likable hitman in one that's going to make my list for sure.
Pretty high on your list, I think.
But that worked because that was a Cusack movie. He's doing these like crime movies and trying to be like an intimidating crime guy. And it's like, hey, Dobler.
That's it. You don't want to be typecast. You know what I mean? You don't want to be playing
that.
The same characters all your career. On the other hand, you have a niche.
Built a career.
Right. You have that niche and you purposely try and bite the hand that feeds you and has made some pretty good movies. I get as an artist, you want to create stuff. I think it's time for Cusack to just come home.
Yeah, he has that niche, but even outside of that niche, he had some. 1408 was okay. Identity was okay. He was able to veer out and do these movies that weren't really Cusack movies. So he would do a Cusack movie or two and then do one or two of these and then go back. And then it just got to a point where he just stopped doing Cusack movies. Like, I think the last 2008 was War Inc. That was the follow-up to Gross Point Blank, which it was very much just, hey, let's do Gross Point Blank again. But it wasn't as good. 2007, he had Martian Child. That's a very accessible movie. I think John Cusack is one of the most accessible movie stars ever. And that's why...
He's an everyman. That's what made him...
Yeah, and, you know, he did Igor. That was his, like, family. 2012 was a ridiculous movie, but that was him branching out a little bit. He was the everyman in this probably Roland Emmerich action movie. Hot Tub Time Machine, The Raven. These are still major releases, and then it just stopped. Everything from there pretty much goes to just straight to DVD. Reclaim is the one with Ryan Phillippe. The Prince was Bruce Willis. Drive Hard. Blood Money, which was terrible. Cell, like all these movies where he's playing just like a bad guy. I guess 10 would have been the last, like, Cusack. I guess I had some hope based on something that maybe we'd get him back. But, I mean, that's only 7 years. So maybe there's still hope we get Cusack back.
Perhaps. My number five comes from before we lost Cusack. I do have a couple, I guess, after he went off the cliff.
What's the oldest on your movie? Mine is the most recent, I mean.
The most recent is...
Mine is 2010.
2012 is the newest...
The Roland Emmerich movie?
No. The oldest is actually my number five from 97. So I'm from 97 to 2012.
Oh, you stopped and you didn't even go back.
No.
I have older. Okay.
I told you, I left those off. I knew they were going to be on yours. I mean, I have one, two, three, four. I have five also-rans that are actually my list.
Okay.
But none of them.
They're probably my list.
I know at least three of them are.
Yeah.
But my number five that's actually on my list, I have some kick-ass directors on this list. They don't get much more decorated, have a much longer career than the guy who directed Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil from 1997. That, of course, being Clint Eastwood. Yeah. Movies does star John Cusack. Some other guy that's in a little bit of trouble right now, Kevin Spacey and Jude Law.
They actually re-released this on DVD with Christopher Plummer.
They just did it. He shot it the next day.
Shot it on Monday. Right. DVD was out on Tuesday.
There are some seriously weird characters in this movie. However, Cusack is not really one of them. He's a magazine reporter who ends up meeting basically every weirdo in Savannah while covering the murder trial of Kevin Spacey's Jim Williams. I've never been to Savannah. I hear it's wonderful. But Midnight really kind of functions as sort of a travelogue for the city. A travelogue if you're into weirdos. The characters in this movie seem like they're just short of like Coen Brother odd. And maybe that's why I kind of like it. It's kind of like Coen Light from A Pretty Fair Director in his own right.
I circled it. I wanted to like this movie a lot more than I did. I feel like it tried to do a bit much and it didn't all land. It's a good Cusack performance. It's a weird movie. It's a hard one. My number five goes back to 1993 when we're in like peak Cusack time, but it's not necessarily a peak Cusack movie. It is Money for Nothing, starring him and Debbie Mazar, Michael Madsen, Benicio del Toro, Michael Rapaport, James Gandolfini, Lane Bracco. The cast is really, really good. And this showed that he can do movies that are crime-related, but he wasn't the scary guy here. You had del Toro, Madsen, Gandolfini, Maury Chaykin. You had the guys to be the scary. He's the every guy. He's the dock worker that finds a bag with $1.2 million in it. And what do you do with $1.2 million? You keep it, of course. And I don't know that everybody is going to think, hey, let me take this to the mob to launder it. But it's a good movie. It's not your typical Cusack. When you think of Cusack in that era, I think it's a little grittier. I don't want to sound like we're shitting on him for his post-2010 career. It's just, I feel like it's just some bad decisions that he's playing parts that aren't for him. This was. He got to be a little grittier while still being that everyman. He's just a broke dock worker that everybody can relate to. And when you want a character that everybody can relate to, 1993 John Cusack is absolute perfect casting.
My number four does come from that post-2010 Cusack era, and it is one where he's not a good dude in Lee Daniels' The Paperboy, starring Matthew McConaughey, Nicole Kidman, and the paperboy, Zac Efron. This movie comes at a really interesting time for just about everybody involved. It was Lee Daniels' follow-up to Precious and came out just a year before The Butler. Each of those two got a lot more buzz than did The Paperboy, though Kidman did pick up a Golden Globe nom for Best Supporting Actress here. And 2012 was right about the time where McConaughey went full-on actor mode. He's really good here as the self-hating closeted older brother to Efron's Jack Jansen. I think Mud was also from 2012, so it was a really good year for McConaughey. But, I mean, I give Efron a lot of credit. He's up against some really good actors in this movie. David Oyelowo is in here as well. And as a guy that looks the way Efron does, and coming off, you know, the High School Musical and stuff, I think it's easy to write him off as just, all right, this kid's just pretty and he can sing and dance and that's fine. And certainly he can do all those things, but he's really, really good in this movie. He actually has a lot to do. He's acting opposite two Academy Award winners and John Cusack. I think he more than holds his own. Cusack's a terrible dude in this movie, and it's very, very much against his type. But it, to me, it seemed like in this movie, and maybe in some of these other ones, it didn't turn out quite as good. He seemed to really enjoy playing kind of a scumbag of this magnitude, and I think he makes for a great antagonist in the movie.
He also shows up in The Butler with Lee Daniels, yeah. And I think those are the post-2010 Cusack that may be the closest to being something. My number four is from 2010, which I think might be the end of Cusack as I know him. It is Hot Tub Time Machine, directed by Steve Pink, starring Cusack, Clark Duke, who I love, Craig Robinson, Rob Corddry, Sebastian Stan, Lindsay Fonseca, Crispin Glover, Chevy Chase, Lizzie Kaplan. The cast is awesome. It's a stupid, stupid premise. It's one of those that the title is the plot. The title is, it's a Hot Tub Time Machine. They go back to 1986. They're all in a rough spot right now. They go back to 86 with a chance to change it, but if they change too much, Clark Duke's not going to be born. It's fun. It's goofy. It's silly. We didn't need the sequel, although Adam Scott replacing Cusack is kind of, yeah, I could see that. But Cusack's good in this. It's not really his, it's hard to explain. He is kind of the main dude, but it's not his movie to carry.
Right.
He's the straight guy. He's the Cusack in this. And Craig Robinson and Rob Corddry do most of the joke lifting. But he gets us from point A to point B, and it's good. Like, he's still that every guy down on his luck. I want this guy to do well.
Still can't quite figure out love. This is my number three, so we'll just keep on talking about it. It's very hard, I think, to do a John Cusack movie and not mention Steve Pink, either a movie that he's directed, or more likely Dave's got one that was at least partly written by Steve Pink higher on his list. This one was kind of a pleasant surprise for me. I like all the people involved, but I was kind of staying away from the movie because it seemed like just sort of a dumb, like, raunchy dude comedy. It was actually really, really good.
It's a lot
good.
Better than you would
yeah,
expect.
Yeah, exactly.
It reminds me of Sex Drive, where Sex Drive just looked like a dumb teen sex comedy. Actually really, really good.
Yeah, you just put Clark Duke in something and there you go. I love the running joke that Crispin Glover has. His character, like, is missing an arm when you first meet him, and they go back in time and he's got both of them, but he's always in these situations where you're like, oh, that's how it happens. No, it isn't. And I love the bit. I think Corddry's character is at a bar betting people on the outcome of the 1986 AFC Championship game, which for my Browns was not really a good memory. That's the drive. Anytime you can stick a Cleveland Browns reference in a movie, I tend to enjoy it.
My number three, I mean, I feel like we pigeonhole John Cusack as one specific type of character, but I feel like in our lists, he's kind of spread out a little bit. And he was in 1999's Being John Malkovich, directed by Spike Jonze, written by Charlie Kaufman. It's not your standard Cusack movie. He's a puppeteer, and he finds a portal that leads into the mind of John Malkovich, which is a ridiculous premise for a movie that is comedy, really, what, dark comedy, maybe?
Yeah.
It sounds like a Hot Tub Time Machine-type comedy. It's not. It's darker. Cusack and Cameron Diaz are really good. John Malkovich should have gotten an Oscar for this movie. I think John Malkovich is beyond ridiculous in this movie.
He plays himself and didn't win.
He's amazing in this movie, though. He does a lot more than just play himself.
Right. I'm just saying. Like, I know. Who's better to play that role than John Malkovich?
But I mean, the cast, again, Octavia Spencer's in this and Catherine Keener. It's just such a ridiculous, goofy movie that could fall flat. You have Kaufman, who's a very ambitious writer, and Spike Jonze, a very ambitious director, and then you kind of take Cusack, who I think is kind of the safe lead when you're doing an ambitious movie like this, where Kaufman had success later with Eternal Sunshine. They went a little bit more ambitious with Jim Carrey and it worked out, but they had the success of this already, so an adaptation, and which Cusack shows up in that as well. But it's a fantastic movie, and Cusack was kind of the perfect casting there because he is the kind of guy that you will sit through this silly premise for, because you're on board with them usually.
My number two is another movie that feels a bit like a Coen movie, although you wouldn't think Clint Eastwood has exactly the eye or the ear for humor that the Coens have, but Harold Ramis certainly is a guy that does. And he directed Cusack, Billy Bob Thornton, and Connie Nielsen in 2005's The Ice Harvest. I don't mean that this one feels like a Coen movie because the characters are odd. I mean, the folks in The Ice Harvest are pretty straightforward, just bad people. Cusack's Charlie is the protagonist, but he's a thief, and his buddy slash accomplice, Billy Bob's Vic, is a pornographer and thief. They steal a couple $1 million from an equally bad dude, played by Randy Quaid. You got a bunch of murder and backstabbing ensuing as the money and various schemes for the people to team up and walk away with the money cause a fair share of problems. It's funny at times, but I wouldn't say it's a comedy. Certainly not a comedy that we're used to seeing from Harold Ramis. Right, exactly. It seems like an odd movie for him. For Cusack, I think it kind of signaled the way he was going to start going. You mentioned Being John Malkovich was a little bit of a dark comedy. This one, there are dark things that happen in it. A lot of people don't end up alive at the end of the movie. He's going towards darker things. There's a movie that I'm sure you're going to talk about at some point. It's dark, but it is a comedy. There are a lot of light moments to John Cusack, the assassin, as well. But it does seem like he was moving less towards the humor, less towards the everyman, and more towards those darker roles. But this was kind of him sticking his toe in that very, very cold water before he would move to those Ray Liotta roles.
Yeah, and my number two, I think, is the John Cusack movie. It's the birth of Cusack. This is where he comes out and we cut the cord. It is Cameron Crowe's Say Anything from 1989, starring Cusack and Iona Skye and John Mahoney, Lily Taylor. Lloyd Dobler is such an iconic character. And we talk about John Cusack being this one thing. And maybe that's unfair because it's hard to see him without seeing Lloyd Dobler, because Lloyd Dobler was so well done, and he's such a good character, and he's so likable, and he's so relatable, and he was played so perfectly by Cusack. So, yeah, he's done darker movies. I like some of his darker movies, but when I think of it, maybe I like more of his darker movies than his lighter movies, like Serendipity or Must Love Dogs aren't on here. Those are Cusack movies. But I think of Say Anything, and that is as Cusack as it gets, and you know, this is the equivalent of Everlong being on your first album because you're never going to write another song that's as good as Everlong. And you live with that. Doesn't mean you can't have a great career and release a ton of other great albums, but you're never going to top that. And that's a tough thing to ask of somebody. And I feel like that's kind of the situation that Cusack was in. No matter what he does, no matter how many intimidating bad guy characters he plays, he's still goddamn Lloyd Dobler. He's still holding up the stereo outside in the rain. That's John Cusack. As unfair as that may be, that's life.
It's unfair, but you talk to a lot of actors, and I would say almost any of them would kill for an iconic scene like that. Exactly. There are people that will get known for a role, and they'll spend the rest of their career running from it. I think a great example is Mark Hamill. Whatever he does, he's always Luke Skywalker, but he's just embraced that. Like, that's fine. That's who I am. And he didn't have necessarily the career in front of the camera that Cusack did after Say Anything. Lloyd Dobler did not ruin the guy. He got a lot of opportunities to play characters that were similar to Dobler, but...
And he still got to branch out a good bit.
Yeah, he did.
And you know what? I go back to Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton, he was big in the 80s. He was offered the lead in Splash, and he turned it down because he thought, if I do this, the 80s and 90s, that's all I'm going to do is be in movies like Splash.
And then the guy that took that role, he certainly got typecast and never made anything of himself after
that.
Yeah,
but then Keaton went on and had a great career. He got to play anything he wanted, and he had a great career of that. And I feel like Cusack hit that point where he tried to have it both ways. He would do Serendipity and then do Identity. He would do Must Love Dogs and then do 1408. And he tried to do both. And he had some success with both of them. It was like he was doing the rom-coms just to be able to do something different. Because early 2000s, I think rom-coms were much bigger than they are now. Like, there was a boom of rom-coms, and he cashed in on that which let him do some of these other movies. And maybe that now that rom-coms aren't a thing anymore, that's why.
This is all that's left for
that's
him.
That's why, like Number Stations or The Factory or The Prince, like these are the kind of movies that he has to do, and he can't do something like a Serendipity or a Must Love Dogs to stay in that spotlight. Maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. Certainly, it's hard to say. I mean, the guy still had a fantastic career, even making less than
He's been around 30-some
right.
years.
Substandard
and we're doing
movies
an episode
on by
yeah.
our estimation for the last 8 years. He's still got a ton that are really, really good. My number one is a fantastic movie. It happens to feature John Cusack by far the least out of any of my other ones, and it is Terrence Malick's The Thin Red Line from 1998, starring Sean Penn, Adrian Brody, Jim Caviezel. The cast in this movie is immense. Elias Koteas, Nick Nolte, Dash Mihawk, John C. Reilly, Woody Harrelson, Jared Leto, John Travolta, Thomas Jane, George Clooney, and that's not even all of them. Most of these guys have basically glorified cameos, as most of the story kind of centers on Jim Caviezel and Sean Penn. As you might expect from a Terrence Malick movie, it is beautiful. It is, in my opinion, the most beautifully shot war movie ever. By this time, Dunkirk may have won the Oscar for Best Cinematography this year, but The Thin Red Line was shot much, much better.
What year was this? 98?
Dunkirk. This was 98.
That's what I thought.
In another case of the Oscars getting it wrong that year, they did give Best Cinematography to a World War II movie. It just wasn't The Thin Red Line.
Saving Private Ryan,
yes,
right? Yeah. This Thin Red Line I think of, and I think of Volcano and Dante's Peak. Like, I feel like it took a second for it to register, but I remembered it coming out at the same time as another war movie that did a lot better.
It wasn't as splashy.
No, it was. I mean, Saving Private Ryan was a Spielberg movie.
Yes.
That was made for a big audience, but still a gritty war movie. Whereas this was more Full Metal Jacket-ish, which wasn't really made for a huge audience.
Right. And this is Terrence Malick coming back to direct. He hadn't directed anything since Days of Heaven in 1978. That movie did win Best Cinematography for, because that is beautiful too. Talk about accessibility in movies. Certainly Saving Private Ryan is much more accessible, and it's a great movie. But objectively, The Thin Red Line is, it's a beautifully shot movie. Cusack has kind of a bit part in it. Not a bad dude, but it's a really impressive cast. I think in any other year, it's by far the best World War II movie that comes out. It just, like you said, happened to live Deep Impact, Armageddon. There's a couple instances like
Lake
that.
Placid. Rogue, maybe.
You'll find every so often years littered with things like that. In this year, the downshot is we got two really good World War II movies, vastly different from fantastic directors.
Yeah.
And John Cusack was only in one of them.
My number one, I feel like Lloyd Dobler sums up John Cusack. I think, like, when people think John Cusack, they think Lloyd Dobler. I think when all is said and done, John Cusack will want to look back and think that Martin Blank is his Cusackiest role, because I feel like Martin Blank in Gross Point Blank from 1997 is equal parts Lloyd Dobler and equal parts Ray Liotta character in a direct-to-DVD movie. I love this movie. I mean, you're talking 10 years after Say Anything. It's grown-up Cusack. It's
Cusack 2.0.
Yeah, and it's him to a new audience, to a new generation. I saw this. I'm big in Hitman movies, so I was excited. I liked Say Anything, so I went and saw it and saw how good it was. And I went and told all my friends, like, we have to go see this. And I took a group of 8 friends who all loved the movie. They never would have seen it. It's great. Written by him and Steve Pink and D.V.D. Vicentis. They wrote scenes and then put them all together. Him and Minnie Driver are great. Dan Aykroyd's a good villain. It's a great plot. It's a hitman going back to his high school reunion. Dan Aykroyd plays a hitman who's trying to start a hitman union. Martin Blank doesn't want to do that. Joan Cusack is great. The supporting cast, what, you got Piven in there, Alan Arkin, Hank Azaria. It's a fun movie. It's a perfect balance between what Cusack was and what Cusack tries to be now. It's the perfect middle ground because it is him being everyman. It is him being guy that's super relatable. Oh, I don't want to go to my high school reunion. It is that guy that you can relate to who happens to kill people for a living. And it's really funny and it's really good. And I really love this movie. It was tough. Say Anything in this, I think, are a toss-up. You could flip-flop either one of those. I don't know that I can have a hardcore one and a two. They're both 1A and 1B. But when I think Cusack, these are them. And I think we left off an obvious one.
High Fidelity.
High Fidelity, I think, is Cusack essentially 3.0. I feel like that hits a different demographic. And I feel like those are his three most iconic roles. As somebody who grew up with Cusack, I think Dobbler, Gross Point Blank, and High Fidelity are like his three most iconic because they kind of hit you at different parts of your lives. Like, I mean, I grew up watching Cusack, and each one of those hit me at a different...
Younger Cusack, 16 Candles, Stand By Me. 16 Candles certainly is not a John Cusack movie, but he belongs in those kind of movies.
I liked 8 Men Out. Very, very early Cusack. That predates Say Anything, I think. And then Max, he made that Max where he's Hitler's friend in art school, which was really interesting. He plays Max, the friend, and it's him. He's friends with Hitler, who's just a kid in art school. It's really unique and really interesting.
Just like really mean Dolph. Something not right about that guy.
Yeah, but those are the only also-rans I put down, but I could go through, and I like a lot. For what they were, Runaway Jury, Identity, even America's Sweetheart, like Pushing 10, like these are movies that aren't really my cup of tea, but they're watchable because he's in them and he's good. It just, I can't say that now. I think The Raven might have been, that was from 2012. I think that was the last Cusack movie we got in the theaters because he's been in stuff, but nothing that had that kind of push that The Raven did, which, I mean, even that's a solid idea. I like the idea. The execution was fell flat, but yeah, I mean, he's just been in some pretty bad movies, but you think of Travolta. He had that lull, and then Pulp Fiction. I hope that Cusack and Eddie Murphy are two that I want to have.
Hope
that
Quentin
comeback.
Tarantino puts John Cusack in a movie.
Or Eddie Murphy. Not even have to be Quentin Tarantino, but I want another Cusack movie. As I get older, like I want that Cusack 4.0. Cusack's always just a few years ahead of me. Like Say Anything was when I was in middle school. So Gross Point Blank was I'm just graduating high school. High Fidelity, I'm, you know, my early 20s. So I want that next phase of Cusack to get me into my 40s.
The next phase of movies on up, we mentioned Steven Spielberg earlier. Ready Player One comes out next week. And to celebrate that, we're going to do a movie episode about a movie wherein a fella goes into a video game.
He's recruited from a video game.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
fight
that's
a war.
That's more accurate. It's The Last Starfighter from, I don't know, it was like the late 80s.
Mid 85, 86, 87.
Yeah, somewhere
I watched it a lot when I was a kid. I don't think I've watched the whole thing in a while, so I'm excited. This is one of those that like I'm going to sit down and watch it with my kids and see if it holds up. I remember the robot. Like, there's a lot of stuff I remember about it.
Oh, I have this feeling it's going to be very dated, but I haven't seen
it
for years either.
I can't wait. But that's next week.
Yeah, you'll have to wait until next week to check out The Last Starfighter, but until then.
Keep it up.